Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3.
Testing, testing, 4, 5, 6.
Okay.
I win.
You are likely to be eaten.
You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seems particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory.
Hello, Carrington.
Hello, Kevin.
We have, this is, what is this? We just had an episode. Why are we having another episode?
This is another episode because we played a very cool secret, I played a very cool secret text adventure game thingy that you got working. And if I know, if I'm right about this, it's the first text adventure, like, ever, and it was on a Laserdisc.
It was the first text adventure to include video.
Ah.
And, I believe, the first computer game to include video. It was published in Creative Computing magazine, and it was a type-in basic program for the Apple II computer, and it was called Adventures in Video Land, and it was written by David Lubar, and he wrote it to interface with a Pioneer Laserdisc player, and it was a game that used one side of one disc of the George Segal movie Roller Coaster.
Excellent. So you would have to have a Laserdisc player and an Apple II and this magazine, and you would type in the program on your own, and you would have to connect them all up.
Yes, and you have a specialized interface card to connect them up.
And for all of that work and expense, you would get this really teeny tiny little game.
Yeah, which you knocked out in about 40, 45 minutes.
And it should not take that long.
I felt like you were... I felt it was about right. Only sometimes when I was sitting there, I watched him play it. I was like behind him going like, come on, Carrington.
No pressure.
Just notice the object sitting in the room. Just read where it says there are, you know, there's coins here.
There were coins there in that room. I had difficulty seeing that.
So I am about to give a presentation at Kansas Fest about that.
We should mention that we are recording this together in our room at Kansas Fest.
Yes.
And that's why if people are hearing lots of noise in the background, it's because we are in the noisy hallway.
And there's the door's closed, but there's a bunch of people out in the hallway having fun. And we're not them. We're alone in here.
But Kansas Fest is a place where you do have fun. Yes. And they're having fun. And we're having this fun.
Here we are. So I'm going to give this talk. And I think we should just insert the whole talk right here. And then after people hear the kind of the history of the game and how I made it work, then we can hear what you thought of it.
Amazing.
Okay.
Let's go to your talk.
Hello. Good afternoon, Kansas Fest. I would like to start by having you watch a 1 minute movie trailer.
Get ready for the thrill of your life. Now, Universal plunges you into a mystery at the speed of sound.
Laserdisc video game. What was the first Laserdisc video game? It might have been Dragon's Lair. Maybe that's the first one you heard of, but no, it was not. Because Astron Belt came out the year before.
Astron Belt, was shown at the Music Operators Association show in 1982. And you can get into, you start researching this stuff and you will find people on the internet arguing about, well, you know, technically it wasn't released until 1983, but it was shown at this show in 1982. However, there was a different show in 1982 where earlier, you know, 2 months earlier, where they released Quarter Horse. Quarter Horse was probably, I believe, the first arcade game that included a Laserdisc. I'm going to take a tangent to tell you something interesting about Quarter Horse. It has nothing to do with any of the rest of the talk. Quarter Horse had a Laserdisc in there that could show 60 minutes of video. So there were 61-minute races, horse races, that you could watch in the game. You would bet, not real money, you would bet on who you thought would win. You'd watch the race, and then you know you'd see what happened, and you'd win or not. They used stereo to have the left track and a right track that had different announcers with different names for the horses and stuff. So it seemed like there was 120 different races on the disc. Kind of cool. But the first version came out, like I said, in 82. Versions of that game remained in production with Laserdisc till 2012.
What?
And last I heard, that article said then they switched to solid state versions, and it might still be being made. Anyway, so that's Quarter Horse. Kind of interesting, nothing to do with what I want to tell you about. What I do want to tell you about is about Adventures in Videoland, which is the first Laserdisc video game, which was published as a type-in basic listing for the Apple II in Creative Computing Magazine, the January 1982 issue. It arrived in people's mailboxes late in 1981, putting it well before the early in 1982 date of Quarter Horse. Apple II wins.
Yay.
Yay. This game was written by David Lubar, who is he was a staff editor at Creative Computing Magazine. And he has an interesting story if you read the article. Basically, David All said, I want you to write a Laserdisc-based video game. And David has a story about how he was just like, no, I don't want to do that. How long do I have? David's just like, 2 weeks. And David's just like, hell no. You know, it's a very interesting story. And then, of course, he ends up at David's house, hooked up to the AV system, coding this game. Here's the cover of that issue. It also appeared later, a couple years later, it was reprinted in Big Computer Games, which was a compilation of games from Creative Computing Magazine. So the official name of this game was Adventures in Videoland, and I call it Roller Coaster because that makes more sense. And what it was a type-in, basic, simple two-word text adventure game that used the first side of the first disc of the Roller Coaster Laserdisc. The Roller Coaster Laserdisc, here's the cover of it. There's one of the actual discs. It was on five sides on three discs because this format that they chose to use, or that was available to them at the time, could hold 30 minutes per side. And you didn't want, it's not that it's a 2.5 hour movie, but you don't want to cut a scene off in the middle, so sometimes they have to move stuff in excess. So it's a lot of getting up and flipping and pee breaks, I think, when you were using Laserdiscs. Tangent number two, let's talk about Roller Coaster a little bit. It came out in 1977. It starred George Segal, who I've heard of, and Timothy Bottoms, who I hadn't heard of, but Carrington had. He was very excited about that. And it was Helen Hunt's first movie. It came on the heels of a bunch of disaster films, Earthquake and Airport and Towering Inferno and things like that, which was kind of the what people were into at the time. And then a few weeks later, a little movie called Star Wars came out and changed the direction that moviegoers were interested in forever. So this movie didn't do horribly, but it did okay at the time. Its timing maybe could have been better. It was released in Sensoround, which basically meant that you go see it in the theater and they'd have two or three big old subwoofers that were keyed to a special track on the audio track, and it would, you know, rumble as the bomb went off or as the roller coaster went by, that sort of thing. Roller Coaster. Now, to connect it to the Apple II, it used a Aurora, later called Aurora OmniScan LaserDisc Interface, which was a card that was plugged into your Apple II that then plugged into your LaserDisc player and allowed the Apple II to control the LaserDisc. LaserDisc players at that time didn't have serial control. So this thing actually plugged into to the LaserDisc player through the wired remote control port. And it would basically emulate the remote control. If you wanted to jump to a certain frame or pause or whatever, it would just sit, you know, the LaserDisc player thought it was talking to a wired remote. Originally cost $275. Later, I found it dropped to $250. Here's an ad for it. Only worked with the Pioneer VP1000 LaserDisc, which is a beautiful machine. Look at that baby. Look at that baby. I just want to press those buttons. Isn't that beautiful? Man, it's a good looking machine. But, there was a bunch of other, many other LaserDisc interfaces available. I mean, this is, here I have a list of, what, maybe 20 different LaserDisc interfaces, and a lot of them work with the Apple, a few work with the Atari, you can get them work with CPM and IBM and other many other systems. So there were a lot of them. It was a thing for a minute. So like I said, it was a, you could hook it up via the remote control port, which is probably became later not the most efficient way to do it. I asked David Lubar, who's on Twitter and is a nice gentleman, is this the first game? Is my whole premise of this talk wrong? And he said, I've seen the game credited as the first LaserDisc video game. I appreciate that. I'm not really sure I can take much credit other than carrying out a coding task that was handed to me by my boss. Dragon's Lair feels more like an actual LaserDisc based game, the roller coaster project was really more of a proof of concept. I think the term one of the articles I found used was the use of LaserDisc cutscenes, which is closer to what he made. Either way, it's kind of cool to be a tiny part of one branch of gaming history. On the other hand, I'm nearly 100% certain I was the first person to put Macaulay Culkin in a video game, which was Home Alone for the Game Boy. So, a video disc primer. Three main kinds of video discs. First, we'll talk about capacitance electronic disc, CED, which was RCA standard. Here's what you need to know about it. It was a record album for video. It was literally a vinyl disc with a needle that's scratched on the disc and played video on your screen. It was not a laser disc, but it was a video disc. And had a constant angular velocity of 450 RPM or 375 for PAL, and each rotation contained 8 interlaced fields. That's 4 full frames of video. And because of that, you couldn't do freeze frame, you couldn't do slow-mo or anything, because what you want to do for that is to just hang out on one track and just be there, and you couldn't really do that with 4 frames per track. CAV. Number two, constant angular velocity. This is called standard play. All DiscoVision discs are standard play. They always run at 1800 RPM. One rotation takes 1/30th of a second. There's one frame per track, which is important for us soon. Each side contains 54,000 tracks, so 54,000 frames works out, I think, to exactly half an hour of video. Please don't at me about that. There's individually numbered addressable tracks, so you can, you know, search to a specific track and start playing from there. Packing density is more tighter on center tracks because they're smaller. There's freeze frame and slow-mo and jump to frame number. Now, later on, having a movie take up 3 discs was expensive and expensive to produce, and people probably didn't like getting up, you know, 4 times during the movie to switch discs. So a little bit later, they came out with constant linear velocity or extended play disc. You could get up to 1 hour of video per track. Per side. You could still do 2-sided discs, which is how the horse race game worked, by having 1 hour, because they didn't have to freeze frame or anything for that game. So 1 hour per side, and no freeze frame or slow-mo. You're trading storage for those features. There was actually another format, an offshoot of CLV. Read about it on Wikipedia. I'm not getting into it. It doesn't affect us for this game. Tangent number three, let's make a video disc, shall we? Let's go back to 1985 and go, I'm going to make a video disc, right? Your 1985 mastering costs are at least about $2,000, maybe $1,500 if you go with the cheap thing. Going two sides, you're getting up to $2,500 or so. And your cost per disc, let's say you want to make 1,000 Pioneer discs using the CAV format, you're talking $15 a disc. This was not cheap. So, I decided I wanted to revive adventures in video land, aka roller coaster. I got a text from a guy saying, yeah, you're not at the retro computing swap meet. Why aren't you here? And I was just like, I didn't know it was today. And I had nothing to do that Saturday, so I hustle out there, and I see my buddy Marcus. Is Marcus here? Hey, Marcus. And Marcus has a pile of Laserdisc players and stuff he's selling, and my mind just randomly just... the wrong electron went off, and I thought of this game, and I'm like, huh, that's funny. And I'm walking around, and I'm buying plotters and doing things, and then I see a guy who's selling laser discs. And I was like, fine, I'll ask the guy. So I say, hey, do you have a roller coaster? And he's like, I do, I don't have it with me today, but I can get it for you. And I decided to see if I could revive this game. So I needed a Laserdisc player, I needed the DiscoVision version of Roller Coaster. It later was published in the other format, but I knew that I would need to jump to as freeze frame and stuff. I need an unusual serial cable, because I'm not going to do it the weird way with the Aurora. First of all, I could not find an Aurora interface. Video disc players had gotten better. They now have serial, modern, right? Laserdisc players have serial interfaces. So I figured maybe I can control it just using the Apple II serial port. And indeed, the Laserdisc player that I got does have one. It's an unusual number of pins, not unstandard, so I had to buy an unusual serial cable. That wasn't too bad. And then, of course, finally, I needed the basic code in the Apple II. I thought that'll be easy, it'll be out there somewhere. And of course there were scans of the magazine, which I think I did a decade ago, or several years ago, and there were scans of this book, which I know I did, but nobody had, this game was not anywhere available online. So I typed it, and 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 I debugged it, and I put it on GitHub, so no one's ever going to have to do that again. Thank you. But this version was meant to work with the Aurora interface, and I had to then next modify the program to work with a modern serial interface, which I researched a lot, did a lot of reading, and I learned that the how easy it is to access the serial interface from AppleSoft Basic. First I learned that I have two super serial cards, and neither of them seem to work properly. Then I switched to the Apple IIc, because it has built-in serial, and I learned the whole thing about using IN number 2 and PR number 2 to access the serial port. As far as I'm concerned, all lies. All lies. So just as I was about to give up, I found a Usenet thread from God knows how long ago, and they were talking about how to access the serial port using Poke, and I ended up bit-banging the serial chip, and I got it to work. So I modified the game to work with a modern serial interface, and that is also available on the GitHubs. So, yeah, I moved from this bad boy, the old Pioneer, to this bad boy, which is the one that I bought from Marcus. Thank you, Marcus. Because it has there's our serial port on and back, like that. This is the list of Pioneer players that have that feature. I believe I'm using the 4200 or the 2200. I don't know. So there is the URL for the GitHub. I wanted to
bring my Laserdisc player and demo this for you. And that didn't seem like a good idea. Laserdisc players are old and they're fragile, and they're not terribly reliable. Laserdiscs have a lot of problems. What doesn't have a lot of problems are DVDs. Did you know that Pioneer makes a DVD player that's serial controllable?
What?
What?
That uses the exact same protocol as the Laserdisc player? I found that out. And so I got a Pioneer Laserdisc player. That's what I brought to Kansas Fest in my checked luggage. They also, and I've not done anything with this, I also learned they have a Blu-ray player that is serial controllable and also uses the same protocol. Pioneer is awesome. Right, so I need to change the input to my Apple PC.
Wait, give that a second to warm up.
It doesn't get super bright.
Okay. So, I'm going to show you the game Roller Coaster. Two people probably have played this in the last 30 years. I tested it extensively. Carrington played it the other day. His playthrough will be on the Eaten by a Group podcast. His opinion of it will be on the podcast. I also have made a YouTube video of my playthrough with the Laserdisc version, but we're going to see the DVD version. What is your first name?
Devin.
You've just received an anonymous tip that a bomb has been planted on a roller coaster.
That's awesome.
You're called to investigate and fly off to stop the saboteur. On his side, he is the brilliance of an insane mind and an aid of allies who are determined to see that you fail. On your side, you have cunning, training, and dedication. You have infiltrated the park with the knowledge that the saboteur will strike sometime tonight. All you need to do is stop him. Now, some of the benefits of DVD. First of all, we've got full screen, higher def, way better video than we had on the Laserdisc. And also, now we have access to the entire movie, not just the first 26 minutes. So this game could easily be expanded to have more rooms and more things and a way bigger game. Because basically, David had to work a game around just a few thousand frames of video. Also, if you were so inclined, you can't burn your own Laserdisc today. At any price, but you can burn your own DVDs. What could you do with that? I had some ideas. You might put a bunch of Apple commercials on, burn them all to DVD, and you might have a menu that lets you choose and watch different commercials from different eras. Or you might make a game. Did I tell you that these things, you can link, you can have two and you can link them and control different things on different ones? So how about a game where you have people talking to each other, you can choose what phrase to say or something, and you can have two people talking. Or I had the idea, it would be absolutely terrible to have a software automatic Carrington. We could record him saying 1,000 different words, and then you could have him. I don't know. The possibilities are finite for sure. Let's continue.
Yes.
All right. And it basically tells you how to do. A text adventure. It's all two words. So press any key to begin. May luck be with you, Kevin. You're in the Midway, which stretches to the east and west. A restaurant is to the north. This location contains nothing. Visible exits north, south, east, west. You can see we have a picture of the Midway. Isn't that nice? In David's original version, interesting, because that player, through that interface, you could jump to a frame and you could play. You could also you would watch both the video and the screen and the text on the same monitor, and you could choose when to go back and forth. I don't have that capability using the serial interface, but it would basically switch back and forth on the same screen. Kind of neat. But a feature that we can do that other interface couldn't do is that we can specify a starting frame and an ending frame and have exact frame-to-frame reproducibility of exactly what I want shown. The old Aurora interface with the old Pioneer thing, basically he started from a frame, he had a four next loop to count an approximate amount of time, and then he would stop and switch back. And I think this is better to just be able to. All right, so we're going to go west. You're in the midway. An aid station is to the north. The sound of gunfire comes from a shooting gallery to the south. We can go to the shooting gallery. We don't have any money to play it. You know, there's a picture of the shooting gallery. Isn't that adorable? And then go back to the midway. And this room has a restaurant to the north. That sounds like fun. Let's go to the restaurant. You are in the restaurant. The room is crowded, but you see an empty table in the corner. This location contains nothing visible except south. A waiter approaches and asks if you would like a seat. Since you are missed lunch today, you are hungry. Do you want to eat? Oh, yeah. You are served a delicious meal. Unfortunately, the service is rather slow.
Oh, God.
The bomb went off. Oops. The bomb went off, and the bomber escaped. It is 1 year later. The roller coaster has been rebuilt. The saboteur has decided plans to destroy it again. Would you like to try to save it?
No. Play that video again? No.
So it combines still frames. It combines movie sequences. It is, without a doubt, the first video game that included a laser video. And are there any questions?
Have you successfully saved the roller coaster?
I have saved the roller coaster. Carrington has saved the roller coaster. It took him 45 minutes to do it. It's not a very long game.
Like 10 years.
And 10 years. You know, when it says it's been a year later, the roller coaster's been rebuilt. It took him 45 minutes and 10 years.
And roller coasters.
And roller coasters. We decided that maybe he was behind, he was actually bombing the roller coaster, or he was the roller coaster company that sells roller coasters or something. He was benefiting from this one way or the other. This will be on display in just a few minutes during the vendor fair. I'm going to set it up somewhere and you with little smaller monitors, and you can try it out if you want. The code for everything is on GitHub, and I had a lot of fun doing this project, and thank you for watching.
And we're back. That talk was incredible.
Thank you.
It feels like it's been 20 seconds since we were last speaking.
Okay, so yeah, I typed it in. I made it work. And although I have played the game many times, I was playing / debugging. I mean, the first few times I'd go to a room for the first time and I'd get beep syntax error and then I have to fix it. So I brought it to you, and you are really the first person to really play, probably besides me, to play this game, I'm guessing, in 30 years. So a lot rides on your opinion.
I liked it. I was thrilled by the fact that the video played. It was a completely different experience, because there's lots of text adventures that are just text, and there's lots of text adventures from the period that have graphics. And let's face it, the graphics are often not that great, particularly in the old ones. If you play a text adventure with graphics from 1983 or 1982, it's not terrific graphics. It's Mystery House level. So this, instead, is incredible full-color photorealistic graphics that often move. It's just like, and have sound. It's crazy. So when something blows up, you see it actually blow up. And the roller coaster comes, you see the roller coaster come. There's some really funny bits. There's one time where you can type look. Are we doing a spoiler fence here or not?
I don't think that most people aren't going to be able to play this game.
Excellent.
They don't have the equipment. Although I have put the code up on GitHub, but there's no spoiler fence here. So if you ever want to play this game, you've already heard my talk, so stop listening now and come back later.
The object, as people might know from the talk, I don't know, the talk is going to be the future from our point of view.
Yes.
The object is there's a roller coaster and a bomb, a mad bomber that what bombs at midnight has placed a bomb on the roller coaster or near the roller coaster, and your job is to stop that bombing from going boom. Yeah. And one of the fun things is you can type the word look, And then it cuts to a part of the video where a fellow was holding up binoculars. And I got to do that from within a closet. And it's still just a dude holding up his binoculars. And there's just, you see the same scenes over and over again. Yeah. But it's a short enough game that it never got stale. Like, there's never a point where it's like, oh, darn, I'm seeing that room again or that bit of video.
You walk along the Midway, you see various pictures of the Midway for each thing.
Still awesome. And there's enough rooms. I'm going to take at a glance here, looking at my very messy map, 20 rooms. Something in that range. So there's enough variety and enough moving around that I never got bored. The number of objects to interact with is like 5. So it's a very, very, it's not a difficult game, even if it did take me 40 minutes. But I liked it. I thought it was fair. I thought the solutions were, there was nothing super difficult in this. Like, if you do notice all the things, it's kind of obvious. You walk in a room and it says you can't come in here because you're not staff. Then at some point you find a uniform. Like, well, that solved that puzzle.
Yeah.
There's a belly dancer lady. You want to get in there. And she says, you can't come in here because you haven't got a gift for me. Another point where I won a teddy bear. I thought, there you go. That's obvious. There's a game I wanted to play that needed money. You find some coins. I was tripped up at one point, and I should have known it was going to happen. So here's an admission. The belly dancing lady wanted a gift, and I got a bear. Bear has a button. You press it, and it says, I love you. And I'm like, okay, well, that's the nature of the bear. I thought if I gave her the bear, she would say that's not good enough or something, and then I'd press it, and it was that I would notice it says I love you and therefore it would be a good enough gift. But instead she just took the bear. So I thought, oh, well, that's not a big deal. But it kind of tickled my brain that something was weird about that. Later on, I'm looking for batteries. And then it hits me. Bear had batteries. How disappointing. And then Kevin pointed out you could say look for batteries or get batteries or whatever. And it says check in the bear.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, too late for that. I've given that bear away. So I had to do a restart because of that. But it's still a fair puzzle because it even occurred to me when I was looking for batteries that a source might have been the bear. So that seemed fair. All the puzzles seemed fair. None of the puzzles seemed particularly difficult. I really like the roller coaster image. Use a toolkit. Like, you use a bunch of things. All of them are used once and all of them are used in a sensible way. I dug it. I actually enjoyed it. It's a quick little hit, and the addition of laser graphics or laser disc graphics and full motion stuff, and the fact that it's basically a historical artifact, all of that combined to be a really fun thing. Like, it was took 40 minutes, worth all of them. That's what I say.
Okay.
I dug it. I have questions for you.
Yes.
That may or may not have been answered in your talk.
Sure.
But I'm going to ask you now.
Okay.
When you were debugging this,
yes,
you no doubt would have found bugs from you typing things in.
Yes.
Did you find bugs in the source code that you corrected?
I did.
Ah.
So I made a couple of versions that I put on the GitHub. One is as close to the magazine listing as I could. And probably, I mean, certainly contains bugs and probably contains my own typos and whatever. And then, so I kind of saved that off. And then I created a version called Roller Coaster 2018, which I fixed bugs that I found. And you know, this was a little magazine type-in program, probably not extensively tested. You know, there were some little bugs that prevented you from winning the game or just stuff that didn't make sense. So I fixed those, but I tried to really keep true to David Lubar's vision. I did add a title screen. I thought that was kind of the one addition I made.
A crack screen.
Yeah. So there were a couple of bugs, and I fixed them, and then I try add a little bit of my own spin, but not too much.
Okay. I'm sure a lot of questions.
I had to change the program to work with a quote unquote modern Laserdisc player, because the player he built for is super obsolete, and you can't get the special card anymore. But newer Laserdisc players had serial ports, so I changed it so it would just work over serial, which was made more sense.
Not knowing the talk, I don't know if I'm going to be repeating things, so bear with me, listener. But this fellow who did this,
yes,
did he do anything else? Are there other games by him before or after this?
Yes, he was a staff writer, I think editor for Creative Computing Magazine, and then he went on to do other things after that magazine folded. He created video games,
I don't have know his full CV, but he was a guy who made games for a while and things.
My favorite part of the game, which is often the case, is the stuff that trips you up and then you solve it, was actually the batteries in the bear. That's the bit I enjoyed the most. Well, I guess the bit I enjoyed the most actually was just the novelty of having a color screen that's playing video, yeah, which was just super fun. Like, it was very cute. But puzzle-wise and game-wise, I enjoyed the battery in the bear that I found more difficult. What about you? What part of it can you just consider it as a game? In playing the game, did you have a particular part or room or puzzle or something?
I like, there was a couple of surprising things that I like that I thought were funny. When you go into the restaurant and the waiter's like, "Would you like some food?" And you type yes, and it's like, "The food is delicious, but service is very slow." Meanwhile, and then you see like a bomb going off.
Meanwhile, boom. I enjoyed the fact that every time the bomb would go off, and listener, the bomb went off quite often for me. You make a small mistake, boom. It would then say, "Do you want to try again?" Yes. 1 year later.
The roller coaster has been rebuilt. The Mad Bomber is back again.
1 year later, and you just keep going back, and the roller coaster just keeps getting blown up. So I like that better than just, okay, start the game again and pretend it never happened. This is, you know, every time it blows up, it counts, and off you go, and you just try again. So I blew up that roller coaster 10 times or so, at least,
yeah,
I think.
It took a decade for you to solve it.
Absolutely, and yet they kept bringing me back and didn't hire another detective. Crazy that I wasn't a suspect, to be honest. that could have been a big twist. Yeah. But I really like that part. Like, I like the fact that it got reused. It didn't have a score, if I recall. It was simply, it either blows up and you lose and try again another year, or you win. And it's a yes or no, a binary proposition. That was right, right?
Yeah.
But I dug it. I there's an outlook part where you get to, and again, good game making, where you go to a machine room and there's lots of stuff happening in that room. And if you head north from there, you go to the roller coaster. And if you're not careful, you will get run over by the roller coaster or it blows up. I don't know. I died up there. But if you go south from there, you go to a room that's just a lookout. It says you can see everything from here. And it gives you a nice view of the Midway and you see all that. But it was, I don't know if it was written in a way or just get used to games, but it was clear to me there's a purpose for this room and the fact that I can see things. So then later when you get a jammer, it was obvious, oh, I need to use the jammer up there. That's good game mechanics because it made sense and just from the way it was written. So I like that.
Yeah. I don't design a lot of games, but I kind of like the idea of basically this guy had 20, you know, he chose a side of a Laserdisc. He had basically had 26 minutes of a movie and had to fashion a story around it. Kind of like, I don't know, making a musical out of a bunch of ABBA songs and all of a sudden you've got a, you know, jukebox musical on Broadway. You know, it's a different kind of, you don't have the world, you have a real limitation.
You've got the constraints
is, you know, you've got a restaurant scene, you've got things blowing up, you've got roller coasters, you've got a guy in a uniform, you know, and you basically just have a few thousand frames of video. What are you going to do with it? What kind of game can you make around that?
Yeah, I like that. And also, great art often comes from the constraints. Like, that's poetry, the whole don't play tennis with the net down stuff that we talked about before. So I dug that. This is probably a question that was already asked, but I'm still interested, so I'm going to ask again, already by it, the thing that's going to happen in the future. Any chance you're going to extend the game, write another game, write a game that's based on the second half of this video? Will there be more from this?
I don't know yet.
Okay. But you're considering it?
I am considering it.
Nice. I would play it. And I would judge it based on the quality of the first one. I'm just saying.
Oh, no. Yeah, the thing is, I mean, people write games in order to be played by other people, and this is a system where you can't do it in emulation. You need a Laserdisc player and an Apple II, a real Apple II, and, you know, a little bit of equipment. So it can only be used in certain situations. I can tell you this game is going to be available to play at Portland Retro Gaming Expo this year.
Excellent.
There's a guy who sells Laserdiscs. In fact, he sold me this roller coaster Laserdisc, and I told him months ago when I bought it from him what I was intending to do, and when I finished the project I emailed him and he was super excited, and he's going to have a booth selling Laserdiscs at Portland Retro Gaming Expo, and he wants me to bring my setup, so it'll be there.
Yeah, it's almost too bad that it is such a limited potential audience, because you could make another game, mm-hmm. but it's only going to be playable essentially by you. I mean, does anybody else have this kind of setup, a LaserDisc player and the right cable? And
right. I mean, I could bring it to Kansas Fest, but I'm not bringing the LaserDisc player back to Kansas Fest. It's not. Yeah.
Technically, it would next year be eligible to be a Hackfest because it's now existing code.
This code has existed since 19...
I mean, the hookup and all that. Yeah, so technically, next year you could say, here's my... So you could write other games, and probably nobody else can. So if there is a competition for best LaserDisc-based text adventure next year, you're going to rock it.
Yeah.
But if you come in second, it'll be pretty hilarious. Someone steps up and goes, yeah, I got this. Cucumber shows up and goes, I was walking by, and I brushed against the keyboard, and here's my new 80-room game.
Yeah.
Anyway, I dug it. I really liked it. It was. I thought it would be just a silly thing. I thought it'd be way smaller. I honestly thought this was going to be a 3-room thing. So the fact that it's got 20 rooms and a bunch of objects, 5 or something, some single digit number of objects, but still that were useful, and there were multiple puzzles and a bunch of characters, and it delivered for a type in game especially. Like, this is better than a lot of type in text adventures you get from the period. So I think they knocked it out of the park.
Yay.
Well done, Creative Computing.
If you want a 3-room game, I've got one for you for the future.
You do?
Yeah.
Excellent.
I think that's it for this episode.
I like it. Thank you for listening to this teeny tiny episode, this very special episode of Eaten by a Group, the Infocom / LaserDisc podcast. If you want to send us feedback, you can, as always, email us at grew@monsterfeet.com or hit us up on Twitter. He is at Kevin Savitz. I am at Carrington. And the show notes for this show, like all the others, will be at our website, monsterfeet.com/grew.
And the show notes for this episode will have a link to me that I recorded of me doing the full playthrough that I did that you haven't seen, and also the link to the GitHub if you want to see this code for yourself.
Fantastic. Thank you for podcasting with me, Kevin.
Thank you for podcasting with me, Carrington.
I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Oh, no. You have walked into the slavering fangs of a lurking groove.